I'm Paul Wiegraff, Director of the Delaware Division of the Arts, and your host for today for Delaware State of the Arts here on News Radio 1450 WILM and 1410 WDOV. Joining me today remotely from Milton, Delaware, is an author, an award-winning author, Judith Spicer Crandall. Welcome, Judith.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me on today.
So glad to have you join us today. You have a relatively new novel out there available on Amazon.com, which we'll talk about, The Woman Puzzle. But what I'd like you to do is go back a little bit in your career to get a little bit of background. How did you get started as a writer? What was your inspiration?
Well, I mean, I always wrote. That was my way of dealing with whatever was happening in my life since I grew up in New Jersey. And there is a bit of autobiographical material. It's in The Woman Puzzle, which was the first one I wrote. I've written others. And so I wrote as an outlet. I wrote a lot of poetry. And I, whenever I had a school project, I turned it into a piece of fiction. So when we had to deal with Egypt, I did two kids time traveling back to Egypt to learn about mummification. I mean, I didn't ever treat anything like a regular piece. I always was writing stories and poems. And then in my 20s, I had already gotten my master's in English at Cleveland State, and I was in the PhD program at Case Western for a while, and I was teaching, and the woman next door to me, Suzanne Byerly, was teaching creative writing. And I had never taken a creative writing course. It's just something I did. I didn't realize, I mean, I was teaching composition for Case. And anyway, I asked if I could sit in her class. I wrote a story that she saw. She invited me to come to her house. We talked about it. She told me it's pretty experimental at that point. She said, this is either a fluke or this is really good. So she asked me to be in her writing group in Cleveland. And I started getting things published, short stories. I was with the Poets League at Cleveland State, which is a really amazing place. And Mary Oliver was involved in that. I didn't know where she was behind me when she was getting her master's, but being such an important poet, it's pretty neat that we were both at the same university. And because I was doing this kind of experimental fiction that was sort of poetic. I was part of the Poetry League, and I got to do readings with the poets, etc. And I just kept writing. I mean, it never stopped. And this particular, the book that just got published, The Woman Puzzle, was it just kind of poured out of me. I was working on it in Cleveland. I got a job with Disney in New York, and I was working on it when I wasn't working for Disney. And I was finishing it up when I met my husband and ended up in Albany and finishing the book. And it's always, I've taught memoir, I've taught creative writing, I've taught theater. I've done a lot of things with the teaching, and I ended up in DC as a speechwriter. So, which I often say might've been the most fiction I did. But, you know, there's a lot of research. It was different. It was a different kind of writing, but I never stopped my own writing or doing readings wherever I was and teaching. And for me, it's a lot of people say, oh, you're a writer. I've always wanted to write a book. And, you know, I hear that and I say, well, if you've always wanted to, do it. Because that's the difference between a writer and someone who just thinks it's kind of a romantic notion or something. And I've just always said, if someone really wants to do it, you just put pen to paper. I don't remember which writer said this at this point, but they said writing's easy. You just cut your wrist and bleed. And it's not an easy thing for me to do, but it's something that's carried me through my life. And I've had mentors, unfortunately, my two most important mentor is the woman who said, come into my class, which changed my life, because she taught me about marketing and sending things out and put got me into the writing group, Suzanne Byerly. She died a few years ago, tragically, in a car accident. And then my other mentor was Gloria Emerson, who was a Vietnam. She was the first woman journalist sent to cover Vietnam. She was sent by the New York Times. And she wrote a book called Winners and Losers and got major awards for her writing. And she believed in my writing. And I have pictures of both of them from their memorials. And, you know, Gloria had a disease where she wasn't going to be able to write. And her suicide note, and she was older, her suicide note said, "If I can't write, I don't want to live." Mm. So that, I know it's negative, but I understand of what she meant. And it's just like Carson McCullers. I was at Yaddo. I got to go into the studio where Carson McCullers actually would go for a long time. I mean, when I was at Yaddo, it was a certain amount of time you could go, but Carson McCullers would go there a lot when she felt she just needed to get away. And I went into her studio and I remember reading, because I loved her writing. I remember reading that she could barely hold a pen because of another debilitating illness, and she still wrote. Mm-hmm. And so when I think of the people in my life who can't write anymore, and I think of writers like Carson McCullers and Virginia Woolf and F. Scott Fitzgerald and people who I particularly love, I feel like I just need to keep writing. I can, therefore I should.
Now, let me ask you this. You've sort of touched on it. I'm curious. And on the spectrum of being a writer who writes in fits and starts to one who sits down and it just pours out of you, where do you fall on that spectrum?
I do both.
Uh-huh.
I think the fits and starts are, I don't know if I have a notebook here, but they would be on my yellow legal pads. It's kind of pushing the story through. It's creating it. I don't know where it's going. I'm very stream of consciousness, probably that poetry background. Mm-hmm. And then when I get onto the computer to clean it up and enter it, it feels like, I said this to people when I was just at the Virginia Center for the Creative Arts. I said, then there was a composer there, and I said, I feel like I'm playing the piano. Mm-hmm. And it flows on a good day. It flows. And I embellish what I've handwritten. And so I think I do both depending on what stage I'm at.
Now, I'm curious. In your writing, what has been your inspiration over time? And were there, you mentioned that the woman puzzle is somewhat autobiographical. Are there specific incidents in your life that sort of trigger a spark that says, this is something I need to write about? Or is it more general than that?
No, I think for the woman puzzle, I needed to write about the early unforeseen death of my father, which is how the book starts. He died at 31 suddenly of a cerebral hemorrhage, and I was there for when all the drama and everything. And in those days, it was 1958. You didn't talk about it,
you know.
I got things like from my mother when I asked when he was coming back, even though I was there, and on some level, even though I had just turned 7, I knew he was gone. I knew he was dead. And I asked my mother, who was totally messed up by this, of course, when is he coming back? And she, where is he? And she said, well, he's very, very sick and he won't be back for a long time. You think when you're given those kind of things, like don't talk about it because it'll upset people. I went to writing for it. And so there are probably a lot of missing and dead fathers in my books. Mm-hmm. But other books were like, I had a dream. I know I sound like Martin Luther King had a dream. My dream is different, very different than his. I really respect his writing. It was fantastic in his delivery. And I worked for a union that he was involved with, the I Am a Man. which was part of AFSCME, which was the union I was a speechwriter for.
Okay.
But I literally had a dream about an Asian woman standing at the front of a classroom, long straight hair. She looked she was Amerasian is what it turned out. And I sat in one of those little, remember those, you might be younger than me, but there were those desks, those little wooden desks that had a little, it was all one piece. You kind of fit in.
You sort of slipped into the seat.
Right.
Yes, so I know exactly what you mean.
I was in the desk. I don't know how old I was. She was a teacher. And basically she said, what became the beginning of the book? My name is Hundreds Feldman, very strange name, and I stand at the foot of your bed. And it was basically beckoning me to write her story. This is about an Amerasian woman, totally different than my background. The Maryland Arts Council gave me an award for that book.
Okay.
And interestingly enough, I met one of the judges later because she knew a friend of mine, and that judge assumed I was Asian or part Asian because, I mean, there was a lot about the Vietnam War and there was Vietnamese language in there and French language. And she met me and she wasn't horrified, but she was amazed that she and I were very similar. I was not Asian. We were both Jewish girls from New Jersey. And I felt good that, because I think, I wasn't trying to appropriate someone else's culture, but I had met Amerasian children who were considered Bao Dai, children of the dust. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I was telling their story through this character, and that she asked me to tell the story. And I knew the book was done because I had another dream.
Yeah.
And in the dream, she had some gray in her hair, and basically there weren't any words. It was just her standing in front of me in the classroom, and I knew it was, you know, that I had finished the book. So that's a whole different experience than the woman puzzle.
Sure. Interesting. Well, I want to continue, but let me first remind our listeners that you are tuned into Delaware State of the Arts here on News Radio 1450 WILM and 1410 WDOB. Joining me remotely today is author Judith Spicer Crandall. Recently released novel, The Woman Puzzle. Judith, I'm curious, you've talked about your background in teaching. How has your work as an author informed your teaching, and how has your teaching informed how you write?
Well, I've always been an adjunct, so I would be doing it along with other things, or when I moved, that would be a good job for me. The way I write is very intuitively, very stream of consciousness, and that's how I teach. I make up a plan, and then I just kind of see what's going on in the classroom and do things off the top of my head. And I do a lot of dramatic things for teaching. To get people really involved with, if it's literature. And also when I teach people memoir, for example, memoir was very popular. A lot of people, especially in continuing ed classes, wanted to take memoir for themselves so that they could look back at their lives or to leave for their families. It's just, and I respect that. And so by them looking at their lives, I realized that me using my life as part of the fiction, because I have not written a memoir, that just doesn't feel like what I do, that would feed into what I was doing, hearing them tell their stories, and also letting them have pieces of my writing that had worked that way. So I learned as much from the students, especially the continuing ed students. And then my other favorite students to teach were out west in Washington State. I was there when Mount St. Helens blew.
Okay.
I had a lot of students who had never been to college. A lot of them lived on ranches, and they went to a community college there. And basically, I was allowed to teach any class that I could get people for. It was like Eastern Washington. It's Eastern Spokane College. I can't remember. It was an extension. It had been a furniture store. Okay. Those students were so hungry to learn It was amazing. And that fueled my writing. It fueled my life because we could be creative together and they were so excited to learn. It was probably my favorite experience teaching.
Now you've had some other opportunities to sort of write in community, so to speak. I mean, writing, I would imagine, can be a very isolated occupation, but you've also participated in a couple of retreats, the Delaware Seashore Writers Retreat in 2018. You were selected to participate in that. You recently, earlier this year, participated in a residency at the Virginia Center for the Creative Arts, which is a highly competitive residency program. Talk a little bit about writing in the context of community like that, where you're in with a community of other writers. What is that like, and what's that dynamic?
Well, I've been very fortunate to attend a variety of these, and some of them have other types of art represent, a lot of visual arts composers, as well as poets and playwrights, etc. And what I found is that, the Virginia was the most recent, is that you would come together at some point to eat breakfast. So there'd be that communal stuff. You'd go off to your studio and you might see someone walking along, but basically I was in my studio. Rarely did I visit anyone else's. And it was that way at Yaddo. Yaddo actually has rules that you cannot go to someone's studio during certain hours.
Interesting.
And there were walks I could take because it was beautiful where I was. And I think then we came together at night and that was more social, but we also put together readings. I got to do a reading with someone else who was doing magic realism, which is the book I'm working on now, has magic realism in it. And this woman who is from Columbus, Ohio, where I've gone to undergrad, she and I have continued even though we all had to leave like suddenly because of the COVID outbreak, she and I, every Saturday, we kind of continue that community support. And we share for a few hours every Saturday. We like make a commitment. This is what I plan to do. Because I would make that commitment to myself when I was in Virginia. But we make it to each other. We don't always get there. And then we send each other whatever we got done. And we discuss it. And we've been doing that since we came back. And so you can extend that type of relationship. Community is good because, first of all, you know you're not alone. Even though you're all in your own separate studios, you know there are other people doing amazing art, and they're committed to it. And so, I mean, I took a lot of breaks because I tend to not sit for long. And I brought my own French press and had my own setup for a coffee, only to find out that they had French presses and they had coffee. They had everything for you. But, I schlepped all this stuff from Delaware thinking I would have my own little setup and I wouldn't have to bother anyone. And people were very encouraging. The night that I did a reading with my friend Sayori, they asked a lot of good questions and they were very talented people. It was amazing to be with people, not only talented, but people who had dedicated their lives to their art. And it fed into a very good part of me, so that I could take it home with me.
Well, we've got a couple minutes left, so I'd like to spend that time focused specifically on the woman puzzle.
Okay.
What was the time frame in which you wrote it? How did it get published? I understand you've won an award for it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I started this book probably in my 20s originally. I know I was still working on it because I had full-time jobs. I was in licensing through American Greetings when I was in Cleveland, then with Walt Disney Productions when I was in New York City. I mean, I had full-time jobs and supported myself that way. I didn't do it through the writing, for that writing. Mm-hmm. And I just kept working on it when I wasn't at work. And then I had two agents for it. And I remember meeting Ian and Betty Ballantyne of Ballantyne Books up in at the Birdcliff Colony in upstate New York. And Betty in particular and I talked, and she said she'd be willing to read a draft. And she gave me very wise advice, which was when you write, because there is the stepfather, I mean, I'm not giving it away, it's on the back of the book, the younger stepfather who marries her mother, basically, he rapes her a lot. He falls in love with her. It's a little bit of a Lolita thing, except it's not mutual. My character, Deborah, this is a nightmare for her, and it almost destroys her. But what Betty Ballantyne said to me was, you know, your reader does not need to re-experience every bad sexual experience your main character has. You just need to give enough so they know how bad it was. And that was really good advice, because the novel is not the same as the life I was portraying. And so that helped me a lot with editing that out. And the two agents I had, they were New York agents, they were good agents. But I don't know if people were ready for this book. I think now with the Me Too movement and talking a lot more about this type of thing, which is with the unwanted advances all the way up to rape, I think now is more the time. And so I have a writing group, the Milton's Writing Group, and I workshopped it and honed it.
You've got about 30 seconds left.
Okay, so. And then Devil's Party Press said, we want to print it. And I was the first female that they actually, I was like the third or fourth person. And so they put it out last year.
So it's available through Devil's Party Press and also Amazon.com.
Amazon is, I think at this point, Amazon's the easiest way to get it.
Amazon.com. And you won an award for it, I believe, right?
I did. The Delaware Women's Press Association gave it first prize in novels.
Well, congratulations on that. And with that, it's time for us to sign off.
Okay.
Pfizer Crandall, thanks so much for joining us today to talk about The Woman Puzzle, available on Amazon.com.
Thank you, Paul.